uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We are at this moment waiting for Congressman Sanders to call in. Bernie is apparently traveling today. We've been unable to reach him through his office. And, in fact, I see the phone ringing right now. Hopefully that's him. So once he calls in, we'll get him on the air. In the meantime, the Bamboozlapalooza is on. It is on. Boy, is it on. Louise, you're going to have to hit talk back if that's Bernie, and just let me know. Bernie's there. Okay, great. Hey, Bernie.
How are you? I'm sorry to call in late.
That's quite all right. You were not more than 30 seconds late. Let me just push the button. We're having strange phone problems here in the studio today. My communication with Louise, who screens the calls, is not the normal. She types it in and I see it. She's going to be yelling stuff in my ear. So from time to time, I seem to be a bit distracted. That's why. Anyhow, great to have you with us, Congressman Sanders. And we missed you last week. There's been a lot of news from the last time we talked to you. Do you want to address any of it, the stuff that has to do with you, or would you rather just get into the issues?
Well, we can get into the issues, and we can go any place where people want to go.
Okay. Well, I have noticed that MoveOn.org, you know, they sent me an email as a resident of Vermont. I still own a home there. They sent me an email saying, do you think that we should help Congressman Sanders become Senator Sanders? And I said, yes, of course.
I hope you said the right thing there.
Absolutely.
You know, the response to that email was really extraordinary. I think 2,500 people responded in the state of Vermont alone.
Yeah,
which is pretty incredible.
Yeah,
that a lot of money and stuff.
It truly is remarkable, and so, hey, I just got an idea, Louise. If you've got the chat room, Louise is not listening to me right now. Okay, when she is, tell her to talk to me. I've got an idea of the way we can communicate. Anyhow, yes, that is absolutely great, and I wish you well in the race. This is so important. It's so important to have a progressive voice in the Senate. You know, the loss of Paul Wellstone was
right.
A huge loss to all of us.
Now, Paul was a very good friend, and you're quite right. And Paul's are big shoes, but those are exactly the kind of shoes that I'd like to try filling.
Yeah, and he was very good. Hey, Louise, in the chat room, Louise apparently has the volume control down. You can hear me. Okay. In the chat room, if you highlight my name and send me a private message, it'll pop open a separate private window, and you can type into that window who's on the phone. Okay? Cool. Okay. So, Bernie, what are the issues that are of concern to you right now?
Well, there are so many that we could spend 5 hours talking about it. I think abuse of power, the fact that the Republicans who control the White House, the Senate, and the House are trying to consolidate their power in a dozen different ways by kind of breaking the rules and by abusing the power that they have. One of the issues that everybody should be concerned about has to do with media and so-called media deregulation, allowing fewer and fewer corporations to own and control what we see, hear, and read. Recently, some of your listeners may have noticed that the Bush administration is moving in an unprecedented way against public broadcasting and politicizing that in a way that it's never been done before, putting on right-wing shows, in a sense forcing right-wing shows onto that network. We're seeing a president and his administration putting video to local television stations all over this country, having them pretend that it's the local news when it really is propaganda coming right from the White House. This issue of indecency bothers me very, very much. The fines are going to be raised very substantially, so if somebody goes on your show, Tom, and, you know, gets excited and says something, you could be subject, if what the House does goes into law, to be subjected to a $500,000 fine, which will drive you right off the air. And they want to move that whole concept to cable, which means that shows that people are very, you know, enjoy watching, whether it's The Sopranos, Sex in the City, the Bill Maher Show, whatever it may be. There are some people say, we don't like the language on those shows. We can either clean it up, we can take it off the air. And this is not the America, I think, that most of us are accustomed to, and we're going to fight back.
Bernie, I've been saying for some time that this, you know, people are trying to draw parallels and analogies, and I doubt that you would, this is as far as you would go, but I'll say it. It seems to me, I spent a fair amount of time in the Soviet Union and in East Germany as well, and Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia, and some of it back, much of it back before the Soviet Union fell. And, you know, the old saying that there's no Pravda in Tass and no Tass in Pravda, you know, one is truth and the other was whatever. Anyway, that this is what it reminds me most of is Stalinism, single-party rule, that these guys, not to say that they're Stalinists, I mean, Stalin was a terrible guy, killed 30, 40 million people, but it's that Stalinist mentality of single-party rule. Here we had a trade delegation that was going down to South America, and Nokia, the second-largest cell phone manufacturer in the United States, wanted to send a couple of their engineers to a conference about frequency allocation for cell phones in South America, and the Bush administration wouldn't let them go because one of them had given $250 to the John Kerry campaign.
Right. Now, I'm not familiar with that, but that is exactly the mentality that these guys have. And we're seeing this in an unprecedented way. I don't want to suggest, you know, that other parties, Democrats, have not abused power. Of course, everybody does it. You use politics to your advantage. But what these guys are taking us into is a whole new world. For example, on the floor of the House, the way the process usually works is, you know, legislation comes down. The dominant party, the majority party, brings forward a piece of legislation. And you're able to offer amendments to make changes in that bill, and some of the amendments can be very, very profound. To a very significant degree now, these guys are making it very difficult to amend major pieces of legislation like the Bankruptcy Act, for example, so you can't change the legislation. There have been several instances where at the end of regulation time, which on the floor of the House is 17 minutes, their side was losing. And you know what they did? They just kept the rolls open until they twisted enough arms to make sure that they could prevail. And that happened to an amendment that I offered on the USA Patriot Act, and certainly happened, as most people know, on the major prescription drug Medicare bill, which they kept open for 3 hours. So, in other words, these guys do not believe in that they have an idea, somebody else has an idea, throw the ideas out, and the guy who ends up with the most votes win. What they are going to do is use all of their power to make sure that at the end of the day they win. That is not a good development for democracy in this country.
Yeah. Sunday, Bernie, is VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, and George W. is going to be over in the Netherlands. The High Court there just ruled that they can't arrest him as a war criminal. But in any case, he's going to be over there. And the European countries are celebrating the fact that liberal Democrats, or liberals in the United States, Roosevelt and Truman, helped them create constitutions after World War II that gave workers protections in the workplace, strong unions, strong environment protections, a strong social safety net, and they're very happy with the fact that we recreated Europe in a liberal way, and it's working, whereas we've recreated Iraq in a conservative way, and it's failing. The neocons with all their, you know, open borders and free trade and all this. What's your take on what's happening with all this?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot out there, and I think one of the sad aspects of what's happening in America today is, and you saw it in the British elections yesterday, is that historically, all over the world, people look to the United States as a symbol of a direction in which they wanted to go. They looked at us with open eyes and with pride, and they said, we would like to be like the United States. It is not good for the world, and it's not good for the United States that we have a president right now who is enormously unpopular throughout the entire world on virtually every continent. And I think many Americans don't perceive just the reality of that. Yesterday, as you know, the Labor Party, which has done fairly well on economic issues, pretty popular, suffered a major setback. They ended up winning because of Blair's identification with Bush. So the issue here is that what we're seeing, Tom, and you, every single piece of legislation, the so-called energy bill, in every single instance, these pieces of legislation was essentially written by big money interests, and they make out like bandits while the middle class and working people see major cuts. It is an outrage to the degree that we now see big money controlling the entire agenda in Washington.
Bernie, you mentioned the elections in the UK. I do a local program here in Portland for 3 hours before I do this show on KPOJ, and we had on as a guest Paul Hannum, who is a teacher at Oxford University and has a couple of degrees in political science and a degree in history. And Paul said, or pointed out to us, that there is a memo that was released and that was on the front page of the Times of London 2 days ago. A memo that was released from Richard Dearlove, the head of MI6, the equivalent of the CIA in Great Britain, saying that back in July of 2002, this was before the intelligence estimate, the U.S. intelligence estimate was published in October of 2002, before the vote, before, you know, back when George W. was still saying, we're not going to go to a war in Iraq, all that, that this guy had had a meeting with the U.S. administration and came back and told Tony Blair, there's going to be a war in Iraq, George Bush is going to do it, he's going to cook the books on the intelligence to make it happen, and Blair agreed to go along with it. And everybody in Britain now knows that George W. Bush and Tony Blair colluded and lied us into this war. And yet it has not been touched by one single mainstream media institution in the United States that I can find other than a small AP story. Any idea why?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even know that. I read it. I mean, we got it, I guess, from the British papers. I read that, and what you said is absolutely right. What the fellow from the equivalent of the CIA in Britain had said is they decided they're going to go to war, and they'll build their intelligence around that reality, and that's precisely what they did. And this is the first, in a sense, black and white confirmation of that. Many of us had suspected that. That was no secret. And, you know, there has been a lot of evidence that almost from day one of his taking office, Bush had wanted to go to war against Saddam Hussein, and he just came up with the reasons to do that. But this is pretty clear evidence that that is the reality.
Why is this not a screaming headline? Why doesn't CBS, ABC, and NBC talk about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the issue that we have got to keep addressing, and that's why it's so important that there be alternative voices out there like yours. But in issue after issue, there is no question that the mainstream corporate media in America has abdicated its responsibility not only to truth but to working people in the middle class. How many stories do we have to hear about Michael Jackson's trial?
Yeah.
When is enough enough? And yet an issue like you're talking about, an important revelation about how we got into this war, does not get much discussion.
Where our kids are dying.
Pardon me?
Where our kids are dying.
Right. Right.
I mean, you know, not to mention the Iraqis who are dying, but this war is coming home to America.
I will be next week. I don't know if you're going to it, Tom, but there's going to be a media conference in Urbana, Champaign, Urbana, Illinois,
yeah.
And one in St. Louis. Big media conference to talk precisely about these issues. You know, people
Great.
Like John Nichols and Bob McChesney do a terrific job in raising consciousness. And the good news, I think, is that more and more Americans are catching on, A, about the importance of the media, and B, that we've got to do something about media consolidation.
That's great. I won't be there for that, but I'm so glad to hear that you are, because you're one of the great voices on this issue. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. This is our Brunch with Bernie segment every Friday, the first hour of our program. If you'd like to talk with Congressman Sanders, our number 1-866-889-8894. 866-889-8894.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
If you gave them the old razzle-dazzle, you razzle-dazzled them.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Congress, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives, independent member of the House of Representatives, been reelected 7 times, Bernie?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Eight times.
Remarkable. It's Ed, and if you'd like to be on the program with Bernie, our number 866, toll-free across the United States, 866-889-8894. And as usual, Bernie, you have slammed the lines. We are full up. So let's just go right to Tony in Grand Rapids. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, I have a question for the congressman.
Mm-hmm.
On Social Security, would putting 4% of it into the stock market, wouldn't, for that to grow, wouldn't it require a national growth rate of at least 4%?
I can't answer you that directly, but what I can tell you is the president's proposal is an absolute disaster. And the only thing I would give the president credit for, Tony, is last week he actually finally acknowledged what everybody knew was true, and that is that under his proposal there would be massive cuts for middle-class Americans in Social Security. His program, his idea, would add $5 trillion to the national debt over the next 20 years, and it's based on an absolute false premise. You know, Tom was talking before about how this president doesn't always tell the truth. Really bothers me, and I hope, Tony, you know this and every other listener knows this, is that when the president says that Social Security is going bankrupt, that just is not true. Social Security can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American, depending on the study, from 36 to 47 years, and then with very modest changes, such as lifting the cap so that millionaires contribute more than people who make $90,000 a year, which is not the case right now, Social Security can exist for our kids and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So the president's premise is absolutely wrong, and I think it's based on his ties to Wall Street and his belief that government should not play any role or just a minimal role in protecting the American people.
Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Joe, in Provo. Provo, Utah?
Utah, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, Joe.
Hey, Tom. You're an educator. I love it. Hey, and Congressman, you know, you're a shining light out there. And when you end up in the Senate next year, I understand you're running for Senate, right?
Yes.
Great. I intend to support you even from Utah.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. It would seem to me that the airwaves, that's a critical issue for us because, you know, that's the fourth pillar of our society, really. And so, you know, I would see the Congress, if we could get the progressive nature of Congress that we need over there to basically look at the licensing that we've given to these companies and pull them and start over again and say, you know what, we need to lay some ground rules. When you get to use these airwaves, here's some requirements. How do you feel about that?
I think you're absolutely right, Joe, and that's historically what we're giving these companies access to the people's airwaves. And they have to have some responsibility, and responsibility cannot simply to make as much money as they possibly can. They have to do something for the public good, among other things, educate people and entertain people in a decent way. But there's no question that we have given the airwaves over to companies whose only goal is to make money, and they're doing a very terrible and, in my view, unfair job in allowing the American people to hear different points of view, so that our democracy can grow, so we can have good debate about important issues. They're surely not doing that, and that is an issue that some of us are looking very hard at right now.
And we did at one time. We had the Fairness Doctrine, and we had a requirement that a corporation, if they use the public airwaves, had to, for example, the Kennedy-Nixon debates, they had to put the stuff on the air. Now they're saying give us some money, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and this is wrong. Congressman Bernie Sanders, it's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our number 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to talk with Congressman Sanders, we shall be right back here at the place where smart people get their news.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Come on, come on, because everybody's out for love.
And welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for We the People, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Live coast to coast on Sirius satellite radio, beaming down from outer space thereby. Also on terrestrial radio stations, or perhaps first and foremost on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina. Streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365's American FM. Welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And Bernie, let's go back to the phone lines here. Tim in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Tom, and Hi, Bernie. Thanks for representing the interests of American people.
Thank you, Tim.
Your comment about amendments got my attention. What do you make of this tactic, and what underlying hidden motivation, if any, do you believe is behind it? One of my U.S. senators who voted against the bankruptcy bill told me this week he voted to reject an amendment to the bill that would restrict credit card interest to 30%, but said his vote was a tactic to ultimately cause defeat of the bill. He didn't elaborate, but no matter what he had in mind, it seemed absurd to me that he wouldn't fight against a horrible provision in the hope that somehow that provision's inclusion would make the bill's passage dubious when the bill itself was sought by the banking industry.
Well, Tim, I tend to agree with you, and I think in the Senate, my memory is that that bill won pretty handily anyhow.
Yeah. Every single Republican voted for it.
Yeah, and too many many Democrats voted for it. But Tim raises an interesting question. I'll tell you what we're doing about this one, Tim. Interest rates in this country are going absolutely off the wall. You have people who have been ill. People have lost their jobs. People have gone through a divorce. They need money. They're buying groceries with a credit card. And you know what kind of interest rates they're paying? They're paying up to 29%. In my view, the credit card companies are running a huge scam. They are sending out. Now, this is amazing, Tom. I think I've mentioned this before. Do you know how many promotions the credit card company are sending out to the American people?
I don't.
You know that those mailings that you get telling you zero interest rates?
Offering them to my dog, yeah.
Yeah. Take a wild guess.
20 million.
Come on, Tom.
Am I right?
$5 billion.
$5 billion?
A year.
You're kidding. $5 billion? There's only 300 million people in this country.
You got it. You could do the... I thought I had got half of them myself.
That's
but
incredible.
But what these guys are doing, they're running a huge scam. What they're doing is telling people that they're going to 2%, 0%, 4%, but it all means nothing. They could change the rates at any time for any reason. And you're having working people paying outrageous rates. The idea that the Senate could not support, I think it was, 30% or four, what was it, 30% max?
Yeah, 30% cap, new usury law.
It couldn't support, it's beyond belief. We have introduced legislation, actually, which deals with this whole issue of usury and the outrageous fees. You know, if you're a day late, they're going to charge you, you know, hit you with a $75 fee. It's a real ripoff. The credit card companies are making a fortune. They have tremendous power in Washington, and it's a very serious issue because a lot of people in this country are deeply in debt because wages have not kept up with inflation. People are working like crazy, and they're falling behind. They're borrowing money, and they're getting even deeper into the hole because of these high interest rates, which is something we have got to deal with.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894. Dan in Virginia on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, you guys are covering a lot of ground. I'm trying to keep up with, I mean, just about every time you open your mouth, I find something to disagree with. I'm trying to figure out, are you guys advocating state-run radio?
Oh, absolutely not.
By saying that because the free marketplace, you guys aren't doing so well in the free market. I'll tell you first off, right off the bat, I'm a conservative. I'm also an Iraqi freedom veteran, and I can't listen to I don't know if I can say his name, Sean Hannity, and a lot of those guys anymore. But then I turn over to the talk. The only other option I got is music or one of your guys' shows. But then I turn it over here, and all I hear is, hate this, Bush is a liar, so-and-so's a liar. You know, just, I mean, it's just ridiculous. All you guys do on the left, on your radio shows, and that's why they're not doing any good, is you bash, you bash, you bash. And you talk down everybody on the right.
Joe, you're bashing, you realize.
I hate to break it to y'all, but...
You realize you're just bashing and bashing, just generalities here. Come on, let's talk about some
of this.
Well, I hate to break it to you guys, but...
Go ahead.
Bush did win the popular vote this time.
Yes, he did.
And Tony Blair did win re-election.
Yep.
So it's like going back to this issue with this memo that you're talking about. If everybody over in there knew that this was going on and that it was there, the books were cooked on the weapons of mass destruction, and this is such well-known stuff, then why did he get reelected?
Well, that's a good question, Dan. Dan, that's a fair question. That's a good question. And the answer is because the economic policies of the Labour Party are working pretty well in England. There's a lot of popularity and support for the Labour Party, but there is a lot of opposition to the war in Iraq. And what I think everybody agrees is that the Labour Party suffered a setback in terms of the number of seats. They lost seats compared to what they have precisely because of Iraq and Blair's closeness to President Bush. But that does not mean to say that everybody there hates the Labour Party or that the Labour Party has not done some good things.
Yeah. So thanks, Dan, for the call. 1-866-889-8894. And whoa, somebody just popped up a window on top of my window, and I can't see my... okay, back to the screen. Let's see. Dan in Dallas, John in Dallas is on the line. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
I really appreciate your program because we really get to hear something. Boy, that last guy, I couldn't disagree with more. One of the things that he said is that, Bush did get elected in the last election. I think it's very important to note that he got elected for being president, not dictator. But that's not what I called about. What I called about was, all this talk about obstructionism in the Senate with the judicial nominees.
Yeah.
And yet Bush still gets 95% of them. What I really look at is this obstructionism in the House with all the amendments. And I'm glad that you brought it up because I was noticing that, watching a lot on C-SPAN. And I got a couple questions for you, Bernie, on that. Is that when the Democrats were in power, did they do the same thing? Did they limit that so that only Democrats could put in amendments to it?
Let me tell you, the answer is not anywhere near as much. The Democrats were not perfect, and the Republicans used to yell and scream about what they call open rules. Open rules mean that anybody can offer any kind of amendment they want. Did the Democrats do that all the time? No, they didn't. But was the process a lot more open under the Democrats than under the Republicans? I don't think anybody denies that.
Okay, that's really good because, because the other thing that I see is that, yes, right now the Democrats are in the minority, but still, in the House they represent, 46-47%
sure.
of the people?
Right.
Okay, so we can't have 52% of the people running the other 48%.
That's right.
Because it's almost split equally,
right.
But if you look at the way that it's operating in the House, there is absolutely no voice for the for the other side. It's just business.
Well, it's what the process is. They have the majority, and the majority always has a certain amount. Well, it's what the process is. They have the majority, and the majority always has a certain amount of power to control the agenda. That's always been the case. But what these guys are doing is really abusing it. There are a lot of good amendments that people would like to offer that could have bipartisan support, but they're not allowed to get onto the floor of the House because the Republican leadership and their corporate sponsors just don't want those votes to take place.
Thanks a lot for the call, John. Moving along, 1-866-889-8894, Walt in Carson City, California.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. My concern is that we talk about these individual issues. The one that we're talking about this morning was the collusion between Bush and Blair. But we don't unite that with the fact that, for example, we know that they also colluded on the Iraq oil. And then there's the store of depleted uranium weapons. That's the biggest story I think that we'll have. And we never put these together.
The President of the United States and Tony Blair gone to his people and said, look, we want to get rid of this dictator. We want democracy in Iraq. That would have been a good debate to have. Bush could not have gone forward on that issue because he told the American people when he won in 2000 that he was not into nation building. So the real frustration here and the disappointment is that you had a president who, in a sense, cooked the books, who gave us reasons that turned out not to be true for the war. And Blair went along with him. And that is not what democracy is about. If Bush had come forward and said, look, you got a really bad news guy there. It's going to cost us, thousands of people dead and wounded, hundreds of billions of dollars. But I think we should have democracy in Iraq. Let's have that debate. It would have been an interesting debate. But what is not acceptable is to go into a war on false premises.
Which these guys did. 1-866-889-8894. Scott in Sioux Falls, South Dakota is with us. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, Bernie, how you doing this morning? Another aspect I wanted to bring up of the media consolidation. Last week in this market, which is about 130,000 people, 8 people were let go at a radio group in one day. A company came in, bought up a small company here called Mid-Continent and took out 8 people in one day, a person who had worked there for 30 years. They took out the biggest salaries. That's one aspect that a lot of people don't realize, the rate how many jobs have been lost.
They replaced them with automation, you mean?
Replacing with automation, replacing with people who voice track in other markets.
Right.
They just took a job pool of not that many jobs here in Sioux Falls and decreased it by 8. I also work in radio in town, so, you know, my chances of finding a job, if I lost my job, have decreased quite a bit.
But it's not only loss of jobs, it's loss of local, of the discussion of local issues, knowing what's going on in the city council or on the school board, homogenization, of information. You know, the same program goes to all over the country rather than focusing on local issues, and that I think is a serious setback to democratic discussion.
So what's the solution, Bernie?
Well, the solution is diversification. The solution is rolling back Bush's efforts to consolidate. The solution is allowing more small business people to own stations in their own communities who are going to focus on local issues.
Okay, great. 1-866-889-8894. Kevin in Ohio on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hello, Senator. How you doing? I just wanted to say about the last caller actually touched on a little bit. We have some parallels here. We've got a rapid consolidation of power under one political party. The party in power now is attacking an independent judiciary. They've used talking head proxies and jingoism to demonize the political fringe, and now they're starting to demonize the political mainstream. They're trying to control, through that consolidation, the access to information through the media outlets. You're now getting less and less independent thought, and more politically correct, politically controlled from Washington, what you can say. What
Kevin,
can
Kevin, is there a question in there?
Yes, I wanted to know exactly why we are letting the government actually control the flow of information now to the public, outside of Air America and a few independent outlets. Most people believe hook, line, and sinker what this administration is telling them. They just don't see anything else.
Well, Kevin, I think the good news is I'm not sure that I agree with you. I mean, if you look at the polls and so forth, I think people do not have an enormous amount of respect for the work that Bush is doing. The problem is they have maybe even less respect for the Democrats. But Bush is not being held in high esteem. In fact, I think at this particular point in his presidency, in his fifth year, he's probably at a lower point than any other president in modern American history. So I think people are catching on. But your point is a very good point, and that is all over the country, what you're seeing is corporate America kind of controlling the issues that we can talk about. The most important economic issue facing America is the collapse of the middle class, the fact that people are working longer hours for low wages, and poverty is growing, and the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. That's a simple fact. You tell me how often we hear that issue being discussed in the corporate media.
Yeah, it's just not happening. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Florida. We've got about a minute and a half. Hey, Armin.
Hey, how you doing, Bernie?
Good.
Are you familiar with Sherman Skolnick?
No.
Okay, his website is SKO.
Armin, what's the point that you're getting to?
Well, it's Skolnick's Report. That's the website. The report I want to get to is I want you both to go there and read the Great American Secrets of the 20th Century, Part 2. You got to read.
Armin, thanks. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the recommendation, but right now we've got to get on with conversation here. Rick in Grand Rapids. Hey, Rick, we got about a minute.
Okay, good day to both of you. And Bernie, good luck in your Senate race.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you something. Now, there are people on the left and right, maybe far left and far right, who are very concerned about something that we all should be concerned, and that's this burgeoning national deficit.
Right.
I'm sure you both heard the name Lyndon LaRouche, and I don't agree with everything Mr. LaRouche says, but he's saying that this debt thing is really a ticking time bomb. And I guess I'd ask you, Bernie, as a member of the United States House of Representatives, how realistic is it that someday all of these people, these institutions worldwide that have loaned the United States money are going to say pay up, and then the country will go bankrupt? Or is that just not feasible for that to happen?
No, well, knows, but no one, no sane person can deny that if you have a $7 trillion national debt, $400 billion deficit, and a trade deficit of $618 billion, and that's growing every year,
per year.
You have a very serious problem. And what it does do is it gives a whole lot of leverage to foreign countries like Japan and China, who are buying a lot of that debt over our policy. So it's a very bad situation.
Yeah, and it seems to me, Bernie, now, and perhaps you can comment on this after the break, that in his most recent comments, Mr. Greenspan seems to be a little nervous. It almost sounds to me like he's warning us that bad things may be coming as a result of these Bush policies. But we'll get into that right after the break, and as well as your calls. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie. We're here with Congressman Bernie Sanders. We'll be right back. And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, you want to quickly shot at Greenspan? And
what I'd rather do for a moment, given the fact we don't have a whole lot of time, is pick up on a point that Rick made, and that is conservatives and progressives are, in fact, coming together on a number of issues in Washington. Not getting a lot of press, but we are. It's not only the huge deficit and the national debt, it's this CAFTA issue. We have a disastrous trade policy. We're losing millions of good-paying jobs. The Bush administration and the Republican leadership are pushing a Central American free trade agreement. You know what, Tom? They ain't having too much success.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they have the votes. I think you have almost the entire Democratic Party united against it, many Republicans as well. In addition, a lot of concern in this country about civil liberties and the USA Patriot Act. We held a press conference with some of the most conservative members of the House, people like Jeff Flake, Butch Otter, Ron Paul, people way up on the right. We did it a left-right coalition, and you're seeing people coming together and saying, yes, we have to protect the American people from terrorism, but we don't have to undermine the United States Constitution to do that. So there's some very interesting political developments in that area coming out of Washington.
Well said. Jeff in Phoenix on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, I'm just really curious. I had heard that Section 8 housing was getting cut. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is it getting cut out totally?
Well, the president's proposal was a very bad proposal, and obviously those of us who believe in affordable housing are trying to improve the situation. So I can't give you the answer to that yet. We don't.
Okay. Question. I always thought Section 8 was just provided vouchers for disabled people. Is that correct?
No. It's broader than that. It's not just disabled people. It's for lower-income people.
Okay, for lower-income people. Because I got into it yesterday with this guy who said that his brother, when they changed the laws, his brother was really upset because he had been making millions. The government had been paying him to house these poor people and disabled people, and it was just the greatest scam, and he was really disabled.
Well, I don't think it's a scam. Landlords get money. What they're guaranteed is a certain rent from that the government puts to pays. So,
yeah, that's all I thought it was. I mean, shouldn't they go and, frankly.
Pretty straightforward stuff. We've only got 10 seconds left here, Bernie, so we can't go to another caller. Final word from you?
Okay, the final word is that these are serious times. People have got to get involved. And reach out to your neighbors. Let's take back our country.
And the best way to do that, step one.
Get on the phone. Say hello to your congressman. Tell him what you think.
There you go. The number for Congress, no offense, Bernie, the number for a toll-free number for Congress, 1-877-SOB, the letter U, S-O-B, as in the old Senate office building, which is what it once stood for, 1-877-SOB-USOB. We'll get you to your member of Congress. Let them know what you think. Just do it right now. Right?
Absolutely.
Okay, Bernie.
All right, Tom, talk to you next week.
Yep, talk to you next week. Good luck on your campaign there and all the work that you're doing. Keep up the great fight.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our web address, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, tomhartman.com, will get you there. Happy Friday, by the way. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. And if you'd like to call, our number 866-889-8894, although our phone system at the moment is down. The engineers are scurrying around rebooting it. I'm guessing it's going to take about 5 or 10 minutes. So if you can't, if you don't get through, that's why. Our quote for the day today from Jesus. No, we're not turning into Christian Broadcasting Network, but our quote for the day, I thought this was a good one, from Jesus. This is from the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus was telling folks how to live, how to conduct themselves, and how to pray. And he said, "When you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, who pray standing in the assemblies and in the corners of the streets so that men can observe them. Verily I say unto you, they have received their reward. But you, when you pray, retire to your closet and shut the door and pray to your Father in secret, who will in secret compensate you or bless you." In other words, don't pray out loud for other people. That's not what it's all about. Our quote for the day. Now, our news story for the day from the Chicago Sun-Times. The president, who says he prays every day, did so this time in front of an East Room filled with people of many different faiths. Bush said he prays for help in defending the gift of freedom from those who seek to destroy it. National Day of Prayer chairwoman Shirley Dobson and her husband, Focus on the Family head James Dobson, were there. James Dobson, the head of Focus on the Family, the group that is now running advertisements on ABC-TV, ABC-TV, which said that it didn't accept advertising from religious groups back when the National Council of Churches wanted to run an ad, which said that they didn't turn away people from their churches because they were black or because they were gay. You know, that was not acceptable. But James Dobson, he's perfectly acceptable. And what's he peddling? He's peddling a manual on child rearing. And what does it say? It says you should beat your children. Not you can beat your children, but you should beat your children, he says, because that will instill in them the appropriate fear of authority so they will submit themselves to God and government. In the meantime, in Waynesville, North Carolina... Yes, Waynesville, North Carolina. It's, okay, little town out in the middle of nowhere, maybe. I don't know. I've never been to Waynesville, frankly, but this is actually East Waynesville. The East Waynesville Baptist Church, WLOS-TV, a Sinclair station of all things, did a local story. Well, it speaks for itself. Here's the reporter from WLOS-TV in Waynesville, North Carolina.
9 members of East Waynesville Baptist say their minister spearheaded an effort to get them excommunicated.
Why would that
be? They say that the pastor, Chan Chandler, believes if you supported John Kerry or the Democratic Party, you were against the church.
He told us that we needed to, if we didn't support George Bush, that we need to resign our position and get out of the church or go to the altar and repent and agree to vote for George Bush.
About 40 other church members have left in protest.
Yeah. Did you get that? Did you get that? This is incredible. So our quote for the day from Jesus, our news story from the day for the day from George W. Bush and from this Baptist church in North Carolina. Strange things up. Still trying to figure out a name for our goose, by the way. Ah, thank you, Corey. Good to have you here. It's wonderful to have real engineers, really engineering. I got to tell you, it is so cool. Our phones appear to be working once again. So, in fact, I'm going to just turn on the program through which they work. Anyhow, we're trying to name our goose. Some of the folks in the chat room yesterday, you get to the chat room, by the way, by going to tomhartman.com, and that will get you there. The folks in our chat room had some specific suggestions. For the names for the goose, we have an outcast goose. This is a goose who seems not to be particularly social. Other geese weren't hanging out with her, and she ended up on our deck all by herself. She's been sitting there all by herself for like a couple of weeks. And there's this duck, this male duck, mallard duck, you know, the green head, the whole bit, who has taken up residence on the deck in the back of our house along with the goose. So, you know, go figure. And they're both outcasts. Neither one of them have been able to hook up with a bunch of other geese or ducks, and so they've become friends. And so, anyhow, we're trying to name the goose to begin with, and so here's some suggestions. Christmas goose? No, I don't think so. That's not going to work. Goose and duck equals Guckert. That's interesting. The spruce goose. Madison Mallard. Lucy Goosey. I think that's what, when Louise was a kid, people called her Lucy Goosey. She's nodding. George W. Goose? Osama? Louise, yes. Osama bin Goose? My pet goose? Goose Step? The Goosinator? Franklin Delano Roosevelt? I love it. Anyhow, Louise thinks maybe we should name the goose and the duck Guckert and McClellan, since they seem to have a special relationship. So I leave it to you. Somebody can start a thread if you want over on our message board, and we'll pursue that topic. But why did Jeff Gannon Guckert visit the White House all those days when there were no press conferences? When Scotty was there, but he wasn't in front of all the people. What is a male prostitute doing at the White House? On dozens of days, many days, what's he doing there in the White House all these days when there's no news happening? There's no news conferences. Well, I guess we'll never know. The Bamboozlapooza by the numbers. By the numbers, they say. I just have to see if this thing is working. Yes, it's working. Our phones are working now. Eureka. It's wonderful. Corey, the engineer, did it. Okay, here's the numbers. 133, the total number of Social Security events held by George W. 166. The number of events headlined by Vice President Cheney that the administration has not released transcripts of after press reports indicated that he was asked tough questions. 2. The total circulation of newspapers that placed opinion columns by administration officials during the tour. 7.94 million. The number of radio interviews given by administration officials over the 60 stops in the 60-day tour, more than 500. The number of people blacklisted from a town hall event in Fargo, North Dakota, because they were suspected of disagreeing with President Bush's proposals. I'm telling you, these guys are Stalinists. Stalinists! The number blacklisted from a town hall event in Fargo, North Dakota, 42. 42 people were kicked out because the Bushies suspected they may disagree with them. The number of people thrown out of a Denver town hall event for arriving in a car with an anti-war bumper sticker. Of course, you know about this one. You heard them on the program. 3. The estimated cost to taxpayers of presidential travel to Social Security tour events. How much of this has been paid for with your tax dollars in mind? Probably your and my Social Security tax dollars. Over 3 million, over $3 million has been spent on this hustle. That's just for the travel, the security costs, the minimum security costs, just for Bush, just for Junior, $418,000. The number of times George Bush has congratulated himself for talking about Social Security, 11. And back in January of this year, when George first started his roadshow, the percentage of Americans who thought maybe he had a good idea with his privatization, 38%. Now, the number of Americans who approve of the way he's handling Social Security, 31%. I would say George should get out there more, except my tax dollars are paying for it, and I can't go for that. I'm sorry. I'd rather my tax dollars paid for kids in Head Start or for putting extra cops on the streets. But no, George would or for paying Social Security benefits. But George would rather use our tax dollars so that he can help out his buddies on Wall Street. The average percent of cuts in Social Security benefits under the Bush plan for someone earning $36,000 a year, what percentage will you see cut? Under the Bush plan, 66% cut in your benefits. The average percent cut in defined benefits under the Bush plan for someone earning $59,000 a year, 89%. Oh, in Bush's mind, if you're earning $59,000 a year, you're rich. He's going to cut your Social Security by 89%. No, I kid you not. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bob in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I don't know if on your Bernie segment there, if anybody brought it up, but this report that came out on the radio today about all these new jobs that have been generated in the community, I don't know how they can say they've got all these new jobs when there's probably 20% of the people that aren't even reporting to the labor department that they're unemployed because they just can't find any work that pays a decent wage.
Well, can you spell burger flippers and landscapers who are mostly illegal immigrants?
Well, you got that right. But you know what's amazing? Here in Michigan, I won't say which franchise it is. I don't want to give anybody some good press or bad press. But in the northern section, they pay $12 an hour in benefits. And yet you get down here in the Grand Rapids area, and they start these guys out, oh, yeah, above the minimum wage, but you haven't got any benefits.
Yeah. But, and the minimum wage is a joke.
Well,
the minimum wage is just an absolute joke. The minimum wage has not been raised in a long time. It's certainly, I think it's 8 or 10 years. In any case, it's been far too long. If the minimum wage right now was where the minimum wage was set back when Roosevelt set the minimum wage, it would be somewhere between $8 and $10, depending on how you calculate it. Whether you calculate it on the cost of buying goods, or if you calculate it on inflation, or if you calculate it based on wage inflation, but it would be somewhere between $8 and $10 right now, and that was considered an absolute screaming bottom line minimum. And here we have a minimum wage of $5.15 federally, which is about half of $10, which is what it was under Roosevelt and what it was under Truman and Eisenhower, by and large. And at the same time, you've got Rick Santorum introducing legislation into the Senate that would say that those states like Vermont and Oregon and other states that have higher state minimum wages, California, that have said, no, and that's not enough, that those would be rolled back.
Well, let Mr. Santorum give up his congressional pay and try supporting his family a minimum wage, and then we'll see what side of his mouth he talks out of.
Yeah, I doubt, frankly, that he can imagine it. These guys live in such a separate world. The very wealthy conservatives among us, they live in such a separate world that they really, I mean, you have to cut them a little slack. They really don't understand.
No, they don't. Take care, Tom, and have a good weekend.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Good to hear from you. I appreciate your calling in. They just don't understand. They just don't get it, these guys. Bush, born with a silver foot in his mouth, spoon, the trust fund babies, the mega rich, the folks who are funding these huge think tanks, they just don't get it. They just don't. They don't understand. So we should have some compassion for them. 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Here's the story of a corporation.
Uh-oh.
That has newspapers in every place you go. It also owns a couple cable stations. A movie studio.
Gee, who could that be?
And there was another corporation. Control all access to the internet.
Ah, yes.
One day these corporate giants formed a merger. Got even bigger news. Now they're known as AOL Time Warner. Broadcasting all the news upon the air.
It's the old AOL Time Warner song. And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service with us with our report from Washington, D.C. for the day. Hey, Ellen.
Hey. Well, the president is, as you know, going on his way to Europe for VE Day and to talk about what freedom has meant, et cetera, et cetera.
And he's hugely relieved now that the Dutch High Court at The Hague has ruled that the Netherlands cannot arrest him as a war criminal.
Well, you know, my brother Michael had that case against Rumsfeld in Germany. Frankly, I was a little nervous going with the Pentagon last week to Iraq because I thought, I hope they don't put those two and two together.
Yeah.
They didn't.
They didn't. Okay. Well, just did here on national radios.
That's right. Well, I'm safely from Iraq.
Okay.
Anyway, Bush apparently is planning on meeting human rights leaders when he is in Russia. And
boy, he's really doing everything he can to upset Vlad the Impaler there, isn't he?
He is, and this is the man, don't forget, he could look into the eyes and know that he trusted.
Well, no, he saw his soul. Did he say he trusted him or just that he saw his soul and it was somebody he could do business with?
Yeah. Right.
I think he looked into Vlad's eyes and saw himself, you know, another...
Yeah, I do too.
Another paranoid... Yeah. Anyhow, so you were saying.
We also have some rumors in town that the Kerry folks are trying to make the 2008 election basically between just two people, Kerry and Mrs. Clinton.
Interesting.
Senator Clinton.
Yeah.
Now, I got news for him, but I know that Bill Richardson is out there raising money faster than the speed of light. And I have a feeling if it's Kerry versus Richards and Clinton, it's going to be Richards, Bill Richards and
Richardson.
Richardson and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think.
I know Richardson's operation, and I'm telling you, he is raising money.
Ellen, my sense of it, just based on the callers to this program and my own personal gut reaction, is that Kerry lost it. Not during the campaign, even though he was a weak campaigner. He didn't talk about the war in forceful terms. He didn't take on Bush in a forceful way. But he really lost it after the election when he didn't stand up and say, "Hey, wait a minute, what's going on in Ohio?"
Well, not only that, but if you look at Kerry versus Richardson versus Hillary Clinton, my names aren't great today. I'm having Alzheimer's Day. And you look at what Richardson brings to the table: minority, a governor, a cabinet secretary, UN guy, speaks Spanish, Western state. I mean, how does Kerry think he has a chance against him?
Yeah. Well, apparently he's deluded. I don't know what else to say. It's unfortunate because I think John Kerry has had his moment in the sun.
I think he is delusional. I mean,
yeah.
Really, I don't. If you maybe you should ask your audience, which when you ask them if they're not going with Hillary Clinton, whether they would go with Kerry or Richardson, they're going to go with Richardson.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, any one of the three of them is better than George W. Bush, or any other Republican right now who's talking about running. I mean, you know, God save us from Bill Frist, right? I mean,
is it going to be enough to have my heart flutter for life?
Yeah, and this is a guy who thinks he's going to be the next Republican nominee. So,
right.
You know, we'll see. Time will tell. Okay, Ellen Ratner, thanks so much, Ellen.
Thank you.
With the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us, 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. In just a moment, we'll be having our Best of the Rest of the News segment. We're going to have Gonzo on with us from BuzzFlash.com. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. But first, Cheryl in Arcata, California has been patiently waiting on the line here for a while. Hey, Cheryl, what's up?
Well, I was just a little bit irritated by another of some information that came out on the leaked memo. Have you heard about this?
You're talking about the leaked memo in the UK?
Yes.
Yeah, this is, in fact, it was a screaming front page headline on the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, that George W. Bush and Tony Blair, well, basically the Bush did it and Blair went along with it, that back in July 23rd of 2002... Mm-hmm. Before the U.S. intelligence estimate, which came out in October of 2002, which said Saddam has weapons of mass destruction, before there was a vote in the U.S. Congress, before the UN had met, back in 2002, the head of British intelligence, MI6, Dearlove or something like that. Dearlove, yeah. He had written a memo, which has now been leaked, in which he said that George W. Bush had decided already that he was going to take out Saddam, they were going to have a war, and Britain should go along with it, and they were going to cook intelligence to make it happen. Yeah, I'm a little upset about it. What I'm most upset about is that it's not front-page news all across the United States like it is in the UK, because it's a lie that originated here.
Right, and you know, to me, this almost seems like this is impeachment material as far as I'm concerned.
It's not almost impeachment material. This is high crimes and misdemeanors. This is treason. Sending 1,700 of our young people to die in a foreign land, killing 100,000 people in another country, and having over 10, 15, 20,000, maybe 30,000 of our soldiers come home without their legs, their arms, their eyes, and hundreds and maybe 100,000 of them come home with post-traumatic stress disorder, all so that George W. Bush can either get himself reelected, get the corner on some oil for his buddies in the oil industry, or show that he's a bigger man than his father. You know, take your pick, or all three. It is wrong.
It's just egregious.
Absolutely wrong. Yes,
yeah.
Egregious is a good word for it. Yep.
And not to mention that I think we've opened Pandora's box with the reason for people to take up jihad. I mean,
yes.
We've invaded this country that was a sovereign country, and they didn't attack us. And everybody knows over there that there were no weapons of mass destruction,
right.
And that was a principle for going over there.
They didn't attack us. They didn't have the ability to attack us. They didn't have the ability to even attack their next-door neighbors. They weren't even a threat to Syria. I mean, yes, and George W. Bush has done more to harm the reputation of America, to damage our national security, to increase the risk of terrorism than anybody else in the United States in the last 4 years. It's absolutely wrong. Cheryl, thanks a lot for the call and for the excellent point you made.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, should you want to call in. Gonzo with BuzzFlash.com is with us. Time for our Best of the Rest of the News segment. Hey, Gonzo.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. It's great to have you on. What on BuzzFlash were the top stories this week, particularly most recently, but just over the last week? Give us an overview.
Well, you pretty much covered the main thing that I think is the most important. It's with the leak that, you know, Greg Powell sent us an exclusive that we posted on the site about the leaked memo that was in the Times, and he even covered the fact that, you know, nowhere in the U.S. mainstream press was it covered other than maybe, you know, an obscure little British vote story, and how it affected Blair.
The AP picked it up today.
Yeah, but 2 days ago, there was, you know, nothing about it. So it's like that to me seems to be the most important thing, and you've covered it great, just in the idea that it's just not getting any decent press in the States.
Yeah, and this, now, at that time, George Bush was saying, and here's George W., an exact quote, this from before the United States National Intelligence Estimate, before the vote, but after he had decided that he was going to go to war, according to this memo, and discussed it with Tony Blair, George W. Bush at a press conference.
He said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, the arrogance, the deceitfulness that this man is president of the United States. It's just, I mean, they impeached Bill Clinton over having sex in the White House. And this is a man who has killed, whose policies have led to the death of, I don't want to say he has killed, but whose policies have led to the death of tens of thousands of human beings, every single one of whom wanted to hang on to their life just as much as you and I do. And we're just sitting around going, oh, gee, and maybe he lied to us.
Yeah, I just don't get it. I just don't get how people aren't connecting this and getting more upset about it. But, you know, that's our job, to get that information out and hopefully wake people up to some of the things that are going on.
You guys at BuzzFlash.com do a great job of it. It's just an absolute marvelous job of it. What else was in the news?
Our GOP Hypocrite of the Week this week is one Miss Elaine Chao for her hypocritical statements about the ability of the department to actually make jobs for America, and also the her helping out Bush in shoveling his pile of hypocrisy by telling unions that they cannot just use a company's Social Security preferences, whether or not they support or are against Bush's Social Security privatization, that she told unions that they cannot use that to decide whether or not to use their services.
Right. And Elaine Chao, as I recall, is the wife of right-wing Republican Senator Mitch Daniels
yes.
of Kentucky, is she?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. And so here now we have the wife of a Republican, a right-wing crank Republican, who has been appointed head of the Department of Labor, which was created by Roosevelt to protect the interests of labor. And she's openly pro-corporate.
Yeah. And then the thing is, it's the idea that they spent, you know, $100 million, you know, which is an estimate, on traveling around to these events to try and push Bush's Social Security privatization, and they're using our tax money, our money, our tax dollars, and yet she's telling the unions that they can't use their own members' money the way they want to.
Yeah, the unions are being warned now, is the word by the Bush administration, warned that they shouldn't use union pension fund money to speak about Social Security. David Sirota did a marvelous piece saying, hey, the unions have to. It's their fiduciary responsibility.
Right.
They have to protect the interests of their employees and like that. What else is in the news that you think is of consequence, Gonzo?
Oh, well, you know, the fact that they... with Clinton in the White House, all they really ever got on was the sex act, and it was such a big. What do we tell the children? Well, let's talk about the Spokane mayor, the 3-year probe where the sex abuse by the mayor in Spokane, and Mr. Sherwood, where a Maryland woman basically said that her boyfriend, U.S. Rep. Don Sherwood, choked her in his Washington apartment. He calls her an acquaintance. She says she's a longtime girlfriend. It's just the hypocrisy. It just keeps getting thicker and thicker.
Well, I don't think most Americans even remember that Newt was having an affair, you know, that Livingstone was having an affair, that Bob Barr was, you know, on his third wife and was having an affair, that all these guys were doing this at the same time they were prosecuting Bill Clinton.
Yep.
And that wasn't all of them. I just don't remember the whole list. It was like 5 or 6 of these Republicans who were all getting it on in the back room and then coming out and going, and that Bill Clinton, he's a terrible man. He got a BJ in the White House. We can't allow that.
Like I said earlier, it's just mind-boggling how they can get away with it, how they can step up and, you know, condemn everybody else for actions that they're obviously doing themselves and not show one bit of remorse for their own actions. You know, it's do as I say, not as I do.
What do you see as coming down the road as, you know, the stories? Oh, actually, let me go back a little farther into the past here. Jeff Gannon, James Guckert. We now know that not only was Gannon a male prostitute and had absolutely no experience in journalism and no training in journalism when Talon News was created, and the Talon News wasn't created until after Jeff Gannon Guckert was already attending White House press briefings, but only 3 or 4 days afterwards, but still, he was able to get in. Talon News starts with the money from some Texas Republicans, and he's their apparently their only correspondent. I was going to say their main correspondent. But now we find out that many of the times that he's been in the White House, there's been no news events going on, no press conferences. And you have to ask the question, particularly looking back on, you know, Bill Clinton getting it on with Monica, what's a prostitute doing visiting the White House on a regular basis when there's no official reason for this prostitute to be in the White House? And who might be calling this person up and saying, come on and visit us?
I don't know. I think Laura alluded to something at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I mean, she talked about some things that George Bush might be doing, and if Jeff Gannon Guckert is there, you know, maybe they're doing them together.
Well, that kind of talk is going to get you in trouble with the right wing. You know, there's a Christian group out there that's really upset with Laura because, you know, her talking about George milking a male horse, that they say that she wasn't properly deferential to her husband as a wife should be, and that she was questioning his manliness, and that's just a horrible thing. But no, I'm serious. Why is nobody pursuing this question of what's a prostitute? Forget the fact that he's a male prostitute. In fact, I think that even obscures the issue a little bit.
Yeah.
If it was a female prostitute who was regularly visiting the White House, getting past this, you know, going through Secret Service, when there was no official reason for that female prostitute to be visiting the White House, wouldn't people be going, huh, I wonder who she's visiting?
Right. I completely agree. I mean, the issue is there are a number of people in the White House who, you know, is rumored to be gay, and there's absolutely nothing about wrong with being gay at all. But the issue is the hypocrisy of coming, having an entire Republican platform that's just so anti-gay, so homophobic, and having so many members of the Republican Party that are gay in the closet, who are practicing homosexuals, yet, you know, and then come out and have these activities that just sort of like show that things are going on, or intimate that things are going on, and then
and then they trash gays. It's like Matt Drudge, you know.
Yeah.
He's gay, and he supports an agenda that trashes gays. Ken Melman was outed, as I recall, for having placed an ad on one of the gay websites that he was looking for gay sex, and that didn't seem to go anywhere. I mean,
well,
was
Arthur Finkelstein, the sort of the GOP strategist, who's actually one of the guys heading up the anti-Hillary website. Crusade.
Right, but Ken Melman's the head of the Republican National Committee right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, what happened to the values folks? What happened to the anti-gay folks? Or what happened to his being outed? Did that turn out not to be a story? Was it phony or was it real?
The more you look at their platform or what they stand for, the whole concept that they stand for family values, it's a Potemkin sort of platform. There's nothing backing up most of their agenda. You know, they talk about somebody, they used to talk about smaller government, and that's, you know, out of the window. They used to talk about, you know, a balanced budget. That's completely out the window. They used to talk about family values, and the people that they have in the front lines show they have none. So, you know, I think if they keep having to, like, raise these issues of fear up, because the truth is, the minute people stop being fearful of something that doesn't exist, they're going to see the charade, the facade that exists in front of the Republican Party, and it'll all come tumbling down. It'll all just fall apart.
And increasingly, I think Americans are seeing that. We're now seeing Bush falling in the polls to, you know, Wizard of Oz levels, you know, after the curtain was pulled back. Right,
right.
Oh, my goodness, is that really what's going on there? Which raises the question of the future. And future news stories, Gonzo from BuzzFlash.com, what do you see coming down the road here? What do you see are the potential, metaphorically, landmines in the road for the Bush administration? You know, the things that might blow up on them and cause them political problems, or other, you know, just in general, other news stories that you think might be on the verge of breaking.
Yeah, there are two that really are sort of out there consistently, but have sort of lost their significance in the sense that Social Security and the whole judge filibuster issue, both of those issues, they keep pushing forward on an agenda that is already, they've already taken, you know, wounded from their agenda on this, and it's going to literally blow up in their face if they keep trying to go in the direction they're going. Bush is headstrong about pushing Social Security privatization, and it's showing greater and greater negative numbers for him as well as for his plans, which bleeds into all of his other programs. And the judges, the filibuster issue, there's enough polling out right now that shows that people just don't want FRIST and the nuclear option to exist. And if they keep pushing those things, it's sort of become, at this point, people are just looking at who's going to win the debate. No one's really talking about what the debate is about.
But isn't there, I mean, people were broadly opposed to the bankruptcy bill. People were broadly opposed to changes in the right to sue as a class action, you know, class action lawsuits at the state level. People are broadly opposed to Bush's Clear Skies initiative. Yesterday, they just opened tens of millions of acres of wilderness to development. And people are opposed to that. I mean, there's no end of what they're opposed to. One wonders if these guys are just so confident in their arrogance and their power, either because they control rigged election machines or because they control the press, or if what's happening in the Bush White House is not all that different from what happened in the court of Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette, where they just, you know, continued to party on and party on while the people got hungrier and hungrier until finally the people rose up and said, enough already.
So the question is it Rove or is it Cheney who's Richelieu?
Yeah, who's the Richelieu, yeah. Or who's Maximilian Robespierre, you know, yeah. Or who's going to be, what was the guy's name who was the newspaper publisher? He was the one who really whipped it up. And I'm spacing on his name, but he was the Tom Paine of the French Revolution.
You know, I think it's going to going to be when it's about personal. When it gets personal, that's the thing. It's so many of these things when they come out of Congress, they get signed into law. They don't affect anyone directly or personally.
Yeah.
And when they start to affect people personally, and sadly, much like the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, when the actions of Bush start to affect families personally, when their sons and daughters don't come home, when their husbands and wives don't come home, or when they come home and they're injured or they have PTSD, those things affect people, and that's when all this other stuff is going to start hurting the Bush administration.
This is when the chickens come home to roost. It's and it's right now, I think.
Yeah.
Gonzo with BuzzFlash.com, one of the web's finest news sources, www.buzzflash.com. Gonzo, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
And welcome back, my friends.
Everything's gonna be all right. You're the lucky one.
That's us. That's America. Everything's gonna be all right. Well, we're gonna have to go through some changes. Thanks, Heidi. We're gonna have to go through some changes. We're gonna have to make some transformation in this country. We need to take this country back from the cons who have been for the 25 years essentially robbing, raping, and pillaging our nation. But we can do it. We can do it. This from David Sirota. And this is the question that I almost raised with Bernie, and that was, where does the White House end and corporate America begin, or where does corporate America end and the White House begin? It used to be, before our CEO president came along, used to be before the days of Junior, that there was a very clear line of demarcation between what was corporate and what was government. Used to be. And we all understood that the power of government was a tremendous and fearsome power, that government has the right in the United States to come into your home with a gun, that government has the force of law behind it. They have jails and prisons, and that's nothing to be taken lightly. It's a very serious and solemn responsibility. And should that kind of force ever be used by any special interest group, whether it be churches, whether it be corporations, whether it be churches as it was in the 17th century and here in what is now the United States, whether it be corporations as it was in the 19th century here in the United States, when the big corporations used government, used police to kill strikers, union folks, it's just wrong. Sue in the UK is with us on the line. Hey, Sue from our chat room. Sue, hey, how is the UK? How are folks in England responding to this phony memo? How did it affect the Blair election?
Well, it certainly affected Tony Blair's personal standing in the country, I think. Looking at him last night at the election, he really looked drawn and upset.
Yeah,
he's recovered since, obviously, because he won.
Yeah, do you think that he's going to stick around for a while, or do you think that he's going to pass the baton to Mr. Brown?
He's certainly going to pass it on before the next election. I'm not quite sure when yet. I think they're all going to sort of go away and think about it, because the election wasn't straightforward. It wasn't a simple swing all over the country.
Right.
There was different swings in different parts of the country and in towns and cities and all over the place. So I think they're going to take a while to think about it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. Interesting. And the memo is widely known there, right?
I think so, yes.
It's yeah. The fact that these guys lied to us about Iraq.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Remarkable. It's on the front page of the London Times, and it's not making the New York Times. There's something wrong with this. Sue, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Thanks, and thanks for hanging out in our chat room. It's great to have you there. Okay, we'll talk to you soon. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365's American FM. 72 and 89% of the American public have consistently opposed the use of torture by the U.S. government. But many people are unaware that their government is systematically employing torture. For example, in a recent Retro poll, only 32.7% had seen media reports that the U.S. was, quote, rendering, so-called rendering captives to countries where they use torture, specifically so they can be tortured. Mark Saper is with us. He is the director of the Retro poll, the executive director of the Retro poll. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you here with us, Mark. I was fascinated by this poll, and I want to get into some of the questions that you were asking. But first, just the abysmal ignorance among Americans of current events. There was a study that was done, it seems like it was 6-8 months ago, where they looked at folks who were getting their news from Fox News versus getting their news from public broadcasting, for example. And they found that about 80% of Fox News viewers believed that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11, whereas only 32% of public radio, public broadcasting viewers or listeners believed that. Did you test for that kind of thing, for the influence of media, or were you just looking broadly at Americans?
No, we've looked at that in the past. It's not in this particular poll. The organization you're talking about is PIPA out of University of Maryland, and they've done a number of polls on that subject, and I'm not sure that the gap is as big as you said. They later came back and said that, yeah, the Fox people had the most disinformation, but they found that in the major corporate media in general, people had misinformation.
Yes, that was also over 60%. I read the study in another program I do this morning on the air, so I think my numbers are accurate.
Uh-huh.
But I could be
well,
wrong.
Even PBS, there was significant misinformation that their listeners and viewers had.
Yeah.
So it's a problem. And in fact, one of the reasons we set up our organization was to try and challenge some of the assumptions in the polling environment, which seem to accept the assumptions that people have good information. And our view and our studies pretty much document that the amount of information, the type of information that people get, is generally skewed.
Yeah. Now, Mark Saper of the Retro Poll. First of all, what's the website for your group?
It's retropoll.org. That's as one word.
Okay, great.
With two L's at the end of poll.
Okay, retropoll.org.
That's right.
And separate from the issue of the poll itself, I just wanted to lay this on you, this concept or idea or whatever. I've been flogging this thing for a long time. It seems to me that we are having our elections stolen out from underneath us. And the reason why this is so apparent to me is I lived in Germany for a year. And in Germany, the way that they do elections is on paper ballots. After the election, the civil servants, people who would otherwise be working in the Department of Motor Vehicles or, whatever, they count the ballots by hand. They do it with people with the political parties watching them. It takes 2 or 3 days to actually count the ballots. And it's the same way it's done in Canada. It's the same way it's done in
mm-hmm.
France. The same
right.
way it's done in England. I mean, they're counting
right.
ballots right now. And yet the people of Germany know within 10 minutes of the time the polls close who won.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the official count isn't going to come in for 3 days. And the way that they know is because of the exit polls. The exit polls have never been more than 0.1% off in Germany since after World War II when we instituted this system or helped them institute this system. And here in the United States, our exit polls generally were quite accurate until the 2000 election. And in the 2000 election, the 2002 election, and the 2004 election, particularly in those states where electronic voting machines were introduced, we saw that all of a sudden the exit polls were indicating that the Democrats were winning, but the machines were saying that the Republicans were winning. And they prepared for this in Serbia. They prepared for this in the Ukraine. They prepared for this in Soviet Georgia. They tried to do it in Belarus. They were unsuccessful. But there is a group of people financed by the Democratic and Republican parties and Freedom House that went into these countries. There was a small group, it was like 6 or 7 people from Serbia, who actually did the on-the-ground work, organizing work, in each of the other three countries, in Belarus, in the Ukraine, and the other, and the other country. It's escaped my mind now. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they came up with a logo. In the case of the Ukraine, it was Time's Up. Or a slogan, rather. They came up with a logo. It was a ticking clock. And, you know, something that could be spray-painted with stenciled. And they put together exit polls all over the country that were solid, that were, you know, credible. And the night of the election, before the government had an opportunity to report the official skewed results, the exit polls were reported, and the spread between what, you know, in the United States, the exit polls showed Kerry beating Bush by about 3 or 4 or 5%, depending
right.
on how you're looking at
yes,
it.
Yes, right.
And in the Ukraine, it showed that the good guy beat the bad guy, the exit polls, by about the same percentage. But although the official vote was flipped the other way in the Ukraine, just about the same way it was here in the U.S. In the Ukraine, they had a new election and a people's revolt. Here in the U.S., we didn't. And I think the difference is because our exit pollsters here in the U.S. said, oh, we're going to change our polls overnight.
Actually, there's even a more egregious example in the election in Venezuela, where a firm out of Washington, D.C. that has worked actually both for the Republicans and the Democrats at various times, but was funded by the Democratic and Republican parties organizations that are aimed at undermining the government of Venezuela, went down there and did exit polls where they paid the opposition to the government of Hugo Chavez to do the exit polls. They went only to polling stations where they knew there was strong opposition. They came out with exit poll that showed 60% against Chavez in the last election as compared to the actual final results, which were certified by Jimmy Carter and the OAS as legitimate, which had him win by 59% to 41 or something like that. So they just tried to turn the whole thing upside down, and it was clearly a disreputable effort, but it was funded by the Democratic and Republican parties.
Yeah, it's the same thing. But the point is that and it also created incredible disruption in the mm-hmm. Venezuelan election. I mean, because the cons down there, the right wing, the oligarchs, took that and ran with it. And a lot of the newspapers were really flogging that. And Chavez still survived, the bottom line, because he's so popular. And Bush, I think, one of the reasons he's so unpopular right now, so unpopular here in the United States, is because he wasn't actually elected. That's my conspiracy theory. But in any case, my point is, somebody needs to be right now planning to do exit polls in the United States for the 2006 elections all across this country. Good, solid, unimpeachable exit polls so that we can find out, you know, where there might be election fraud happening and reveal it to the light of day and not do it in a way that's going to back off and have CNN readjust their figures the next day.
Well, it's the same media problem. It's the money problem. I mean, the major media pooled, they created an election pool for this exit poll operation. It costs many millions of dollars for it to be put into effect, and they get the kinds of information and results that they want. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not particularly on the track that Mitofsky Edison did a job that was, you know, put up to create fraud. They didn't do that.
No, because their exit poll showed that Kerry won.
Well, yeah, but they don't. They argue that it's not true.
They don't believe their own poll.
They don't believe. That's right. They don't believe their own poll, and they've come up with various rationalizations for what the problems with the poll were. It is true that there are some subtle issues. It is true that in the previous election, presidential election, past few elections, there's never been this big a discrepancy, but there have been some discrepancies, and there are some problems that they haven't yet figured out in terms of what's causing it. And I think that's real. But in this election, I tend to agree with you. I think that if we were able to look at the detailed data from the precinct level, which they are concealing under proprietary restrictions by who owns it, and also confidentiality issues they claim. But
right.
if they
who
were,
owns
if
the
they,
voting machines, yeah.
If they were willing to reveal all the details at the precinct level of the exit poll data, I think we would find that there is a significant problem with the final vote tallies in those very precincts.
I see what you're saying. Mitofsky Edison are still concealing their data.
Well, they have two arguments for why they won't. They put up the data, but they won't tell you where the precincts are. So you have X precinct in some state, and so you can't really go to that precinct and look and see what actually happened.
Yeah, and this is wrong. So my question to you, Mark Saper, is why don't you guys do this?
We don't have any money. We're just a small nonprofit committee that runs these kinds of polls, and our whole idea is to challenge the assumptions that go into a lot of the polling that's done by the corporate media.
But there are people out there with money, and I really think that if a movement was put together, I don't know, maybe we should be knocking on the door of John Zogby instead, but you know, let me know what you think. But I it really seems to me that if somebody really spearheaded a movement and said, hey, you know, George Soros, hey, you know, American people, here's where you want to invest $10 in the election this time. I mean, look at the tens of millions of dollars that John Kerry raised on the internet. I mean, there's money out there. There's people who I am convinced that you know, with a fair amount of publicity just on the web, that it wouldn't be that difficult to raise a few million dollars to fund
a
good solid exit
polls. You're right. I mean, Move On raised lots of money, and certainly Zogby is somebody that would be somebody who you could probably count on to do a decent job on something like this. But it's a lot of money, and you know, he's not going to fund it himself unless somebody comes up with it. Basically, it's also got to be reported and you know, directly plugged in. The CNN and ABC and all these guys, NBC and CBS, they got together, and by the time you get them all together, you have a total monopoly. You already have basically only six companies running all of the media, six giant companies. You put them all together, and they decide what's going to be the exit poll strategy and who's going to tell who about what, and that's what the information that the public gets. Now, you might be able to break that if you get a big consortium that's going to put up several millions of dollars to do this work, but it's a huge amount of work. It's not the kind of thing that our group would ever even, we are not in a position to do that, but I think Zogby might be an interesting option if you could get somebody to fund it.
Yeah, well, I'll have to get him on the program here and pitch it, or write an op-ed for Common Dreams proposing it. So back to your poll. We have about a minute and a half left in this segment, but I'd like to hold you over the break and talk again.
Sure.
We've got another 5 minutes before the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
Your poll, one of the things that I found fascinating about this is you were reading people pieces of the Bill of Rights and asking them if this was actually part of our Constitution.
We've done that in past polls. We have indeed. Yeah, this time we asked them questions about whether some of these rights have been taken away under the Patriot Act and other laws, and we decided that our questions were too compounded and that they probably can't get useful answers. But in the past, we did exactly what you said. We asked people whether or not certain things right out of the Bill of Rights were actually rights, and we got pretty good responses. People were, I mean, you'd like to see 90 or 100%. It wasn't like that, but we would get 65-75% of people knowing which rights are there. So
hey,
that's
pretty good.
Not bad.
I, you know, I remember back during the Vietnam War when somebody did a survey where they read people part of the Declaration of Independence and said, you know, is this a communist document? And the answer was yes. You know,
the problem is that people don't know that these rights have been taken away. They know what's there, but they're not aware of the laws that are taking them away.
Right. We're talking with Mark Saper. He's with the RetroPoll, the executive director of RetroPoll.org. You can check it out on the web. And Mark will be back after this break. And stick around, my friends. If you have a question, our number 866-889-8894. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, I've been howling in my sleep.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. We're talking with Mark Saper of the RetroPoll. And, Mark, we were just getting into this. Actually, we have a call. Dave in Humboldt County has a question for you, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
Okay, Dave, welcome to the program.
Mark, I very much share some of the concerns that Tom is voicing. I guess you share them as well. Computers can indeed be invaded, and they regularly are, and results can be changed. Incidentally, Tom, I want to share a thought with you briefly, if I might. Contemplate the possibility Bush knows how badly he's lost, and a lot of what's coming at us from the White House, he's angry with us. He's punishing the people, but that's just a side thought. But
Dave, your background as a psychologist is showing through here. It's anyhow, your question for Mark.
Yes, you being aware that computers can be invaded, I'm curious as to how you are able to tabulate your own findings. Does it go on any computers that have a modem?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand your question.
I think Dave is asking: is your own data secure here?
Well, we're using fairly. We have computers, of course, and we're using fairly small numbers. And we have volunteers doing the polling for us. I check all the work they're doing, and we. It's pretty straightforward. There's no.
You're generating paper trails.
It would be fairly obvious if anybody could. I don't know if that's possible, but if anybody could get into my computer and change answers, it would be fairly obvious.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to the outcome, to the consequences. What you learned. What was the most surprising thing for you that came out of this last retro poll?
In this particular poll, well. Not the most surprising, but we've always looked at the relationship between people's knowledge and their beliefs. And again, in this poll, we show that it's the people who still believe, go hook, line, and sinker for a lot of these absurd stories like Saddam Hussein worked with Al-Qaeda and so forth, that they're the ones that have problems, you know, with their deductive reasoning and figuring out what is really going on. And so they wind up thinking that the terrorist threat is something different from what it is and way exaggerated, and that they have a tremendous need to fall in line behind the president. And so, you know, even when you get over to the issue of, say, a moratorium on the death penalty or support for the nominations like John Negroponte and Alberto Gonzalez in view of their support for torture, because we put that in the question, do you support these nominations and these appointments in view of their support for the use of torture? And almost nobody supports it if you make it clear that that's what their positions were, except when you look at these people who still think that Saddam worked with Al-Qaeda or, you know, the weapons of mass destruction, all that. And then even many of those people don't buy it, but 30% think that it was fine to have to appoint Negroponte and Gonzalez. Amazingly, overall, it's really a small percentage of people, 17. That is, I think, the most surprising finding, is that when you make it clear to people that these two guys have endorsed the use of torture, as they did in some circumstances, then you find that there is overwhelming opposition to what are now two of the key, most powerful people in the United States, the head of national security and the head of the State Department, right? Attorney General, excuse me.
Yeah, the Attorney General. Do you think, Mark Saper, that this means that the Bush administration and that the cons in general, the whole conservative bunch, are headed for a fall electorally in the 2006-2008 elections?
Well, I think it's kind of like the way you were saying. I mean, things are so rigged in a sense. I mean, the amount of money that goes into advertising. I mean, just you know, whether or not you're a Kerry fan, the fact of the matter is that the amount of dirty tricks that they did. You know, they took Kerry, who's very strong in terms of his background and having been to Vietnam, and then coming back and exposing what was actually going on there, and they turned that into a deficit for him with this group, you know, the Swift boat people.
Right.
Now, not everybody bought that, but they have so many of these different tricks that they get a little bit here and a little bit there. So it's hard to know how, to what extent they can manipulate things. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I mean, California is apparently at this point one of the most progressive states in the country as far as his voting record. So how did Arnold Schwarzenegger get
right.
a majority?
Right, and he was meeting with Ken Lay before, during the energy crisis.
Exactly.
Mark, we're out of time, but thanks so much for being with us. Retropoll.org for more information. Mark Saper,
thanks. Thank you very much, Tom.
Now for
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. This is a new piece of bumper music to me. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, if you'd like to drop into our chat room. I started on this toward the end of the last hour. I just began the setup on it, as it were, I want to come back to it because I think it's so important. This is really a big deal. There was, historically in the United States, we have had a clear line of separation and absolutely visible, knowable line, point of demarcation between between government and specific private interests. For example, churches, or, you know, the wall of separation between church and state, or between government and corporate interests. For 180 years, 200 years in the United States, if corporate interests gave money to government, that was called bribery. It was against the law. Bribery and influencing laws. And then, it got very corrupt in the 1880s, 1890s, the 1900s, the railroads buying off politicians. And then, Mellon and Carnegie and, Carnegie wasn't so bad, but Mellon certainly and John Rockefeller and whatnot around the turn of the 19th to 20th centuries. And so Teddy Roosevelt got on his high horse, metaphorically speaking, and in 1907 came along and said, okay, that's it. No more. And in 1907 got a law passed that said it's a crime for a corporation to give money to a politician. A crime. And that law is still on the books. So we have always understood that there's a clear line of separation between a corporation and government. Because government has this tremendous power. They have the power of the guns. They have the power of the jails. They have the power of the police apparatus. They have the power to control our future, our fate. They can put, government can put you away forever if they choose to. Government is the only institution that can legally kill people in the United States. And regularly does. And that's a power that should be very, very tightly controlled, as the founders clearly understood, and should be clearly and tightly regulated by we the people. We the people hold that power. Or certainly should. And so when a private interest, whether it be a church, whether it be a corporation, whether it be a foreign government, when any other interest outside of government, outside of we the people, takes control of government, we have a really serious problem in this country. It is called the loss of democracy. And now we have the White House. Bush Jr.'s White House. Sending out invitations, official invitations, using your and my tax dollars, asking people to attend events in support of the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, that are being sponsored by the corporations who will benefit from CAFTA, specifically FedEx, Citigroup, and Western Union. Multinational corporations, corporations that, as we do more business with other countries, enhance their business. Okay, so, that's fine. I understand that. They're going to make more money. But getting in bed with the White House? The White House is using taxpayer resources to urge people to attend events being put on by FedEx, Citigroup, and Western Union to promote this corporate-written free trade deal, writes David Sirota. You can check it out at his blog at davidsirota.com. Actually see a picture of it. An invitation being blasted out by the White House in Word format, complete with corporate logos. No, I'm not making this up. I'm not kidding. The White House is sending out invitations to people to a CAFTA event sponsored by big multinational corporations, and their logos are on the White House's official invitation. And then, to make it even more bizarre, the White House says, and if you're going to attend, please RSVP us here at the White House. What? RSVP the White House? Have we lost all distinction between corporate power and government power? This is a dark day, my friends. This is a serious issue. It's entirely appropriate for the president to have a position on an issue, even if it's a position that is pro-corporate, and to go out and say, hey, this is my position. You've got George Bush out there saying we should cut down more forests because it makes money for the lumber companies, that we should drill for more oil because it makes money for the oil companies, that we should burn more coal, it makes money for the coal companies, the list goes on and on. We should build more nuclear, it makes money for the nuclear industry. You've got George Bush, basically, any big special interest group that comes along, as long as it has to do with corporations and not we the people, the special interest group of unions he doesn't talk to. But any of the big special interest groups, yeah, the big churches, the huge multinational, the huge mega churches, they're not multinational, huge multi-state churches, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, James Dobson, these multi-millionaire, in the case of Robertson, billionaire churches come along, and the White House says, okay, fine, hop in the back seat. We'll take you along for the ride. And I have to say, you know, it's okay for the White House, it's okay for George W. Bush to say to us that he's in favor of things that are going to benefit corporations, and those corporations, you know, we all know those corporations are paying for the ticket. It's not completely illegal. It's wrong, in my opinion. It's morally reprehensible. It looks terrible. But here now, they've gone over the line. To have the White House sending out invitations with corporate logos on them, asking people to RSVP a corporate-sponsored event to the White House. This is, if you didn't believe before that George W. Bush is totally in the pocket of the interests of inherited wealth and multinational corporations, it is impossible to deny any longer. And you can see it right there at davidsirota.com. It is absolutely indisputable, and this is a dark day for democracy in America. I have to tell you, it is. This is bad. This is not a good thing. This is not healthy. This is absolutely wrong. And if you want to let the White House know your thoughts on this, you can call the White House. 1-877, toll free, you can call the White House, 1-877-SOB-USOB, and that will get you right through to the Capitol operator, and you can simply say, please connect me to the President's office or the Vice President's office, and let them know what you think. This is over the top. Or let your elected member of Congress know what you think. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Helen in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Helen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 had the Public Utility Holding Company Act and the Federal Power Act and the Federal Communications Act.
That's right.
And combined with state laws, which was like telling electricity, gas, telephone, and water companies when to sit and stand and whatever.
Yep. Well, so, and let's add to Helen that what he said to them was, it's fine for you to make a profit. You can make a reasonable profit. We understand that. But you can't gouge the taxpayers, the ratepayers, and you can't use your monopoly power to take advantage of people.
Well, he made made it known that he didn't want any political donations or soft money or hard money or any money, period, from companies and to donate politically. And, of course, it held for half a century. But the utility companies hated it. They're taking it out on us now.
That's right. Well, Ronald Reagan started dismantling those laws, and then George Bush Sr. Took another whack at them, and now George Bush Jr. has really undone them. But, truth be told, Bill Clinton wasn't all that strong on his stuff either. You know, he was the best Republican president we've had since Eisenhower.
Well, I would like to say yesterday on the news I saw where the president is going to have logging roads through our national forest.
Yes.
8.5 million acres.
It's more than that, actually.
And it's supposed to be. Clinton said no to those forests being bothered.
That's
but
right.
It's mighty funny. Bill Clinton is so close with the president's father and the president. This is why I will never vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And this is my feelings. That we're being sold out, and it's pretty sad when we see our former president be so chummy to go with his little museum and the World War II event and the Super Bowl and then the tsunami. I mean, why don't he just move in with him?
Yeah, I think a lot of Americans are sharing your concern, Helen, and it's making a lot of us very uncomfortable how Bill Clinton and George Bush, or the Bush family, the whole Bush crime family, and Bill Clinton are sucking up to each other. And now, whether or not Hillary is playing any role in that or taking any part in that, I don't know. It really looks, from the outside looking in, like Bill and Hillary's lives have gone in separate directions.
Well, but can I say one more thing?
You can say as many as you want.
Well, there's so many things I'd love to say.
Go for it.
You just don't have the time. But what I was going to say. A week ago, I was watching the big rally on the Social Security up in Washington.
Yeah.
And I saw Hillary. And she walks out with her sunglasses on, and she disappears. I didn't see her anymore, but I saw all the others. Now, she being a first lady at one time, she should know to step forward and have some answers for us Democrats. If she wants to run for president, why isn't she talking about Walmart where she helped them? She knew there was child labor going on in China when she worked for Walmart.
Actually, let's keep the record straight here, Helen. Hillary was on the board of directors of Walmart back when Bill was a governor of Arkansas. And at that time, Sam Walton was still alive, and Walmart's slogan was Buy American.
But George Sr. went to Arkansas and gave Sam Walton the Presidential Medal of Honor for
right.
a citizen.
Right. Now, you see, keep in mind, Sam Walton and Walmart started out as a Buy American company. That was their slogan. I remember going into Walmart's in the early days, in the early 80s, and you know, they had all this American stuff. And, you know, whether the transition happened with or without Sam, I frankly don't know the history of Walmart that well to tell you. But Walmart is no longer what it was when Sam Walton started it. And that's, you know, not to defend Hillary for being on their board of directors, but people bring that up as if she was on their board of directors yesterday. It was 25 years ago.
Yeah, but she didn't put it down. When she went to Washington, she didn't let it be known
yeah.
that she had once done that. So
yeah.
to me,
well,
when you...
I wouldn't either, frankly. Would you, Helen?
Well, no, I'm honest. I mean, you know, I just
yeah.
came around and say it. I mean, you know, at the time when she got in up there with her husband, I mean, why didn't she just reveal that?
Well, Helen, you're the kind of woman that we need running for president.
Oh, wow. I'd like to.
Well,
I don't think I could.
Well, you know, start local. Start
oh,
local.
Really?
Get involved in local politics if you can.
Well, I hope the listeners, I hope all the listeners that's listening, bless their hearts. I'll tell you right now, I couldn't hardly miss a day of you. I listen to you so much, I don't call in because I'm so intrigued with what you have to say.
Well, thank you, Helen. That's very kind of you.
And I appreciate you.
Thank you. And on that note, I will move along. Thanks so much for calling, though.
Thanks,
I do appreciate it. Keep up the great work and keep telling all your friends, you know, waking people up. My favorite slogan for this program, tag, you're it. Now, you pass it along. Pass along the good word. Last week, this is from the Daily Kos. This another amazing tie-in to these judges, these so-called judges that the Republicans are promoting. Last week, this from Plutonium Page on the Daily Kos. Plutonium says, last week I pointed out the irony that one of Bush's filibuster judicial nominees is the son of the former Republican senator who led the last filibuster of a Supreme Court nominee. Today, says Plutonium, we'll look at another of Bush's filibustered nominees and his connection to Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Now, this is a fascinating one. Judge Henry Saad, S-A-A-D, Judge Henry Saad from Michigan. He's, in fact, he's on the U.S. He's been nominated for the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which I believe would include Michigan. He's currently on the Michigan Court of Appeals. His confirmation was blocked. Bush put him back up again, and now he's stalled in the Senate. He's one of the toxic seven. Well, it turns out that in 1992, his wife, who is an attorney, Mara Latika, and vice president of her family business, Latika Corporation, in 1992, she was nominated by Bush Sr. as the U.S. ambassador to Croatia. But she wasn't approved by the Senate. And then Clinton came into office, and so she never got a chance to have the job. In 2004, she was one of 105 members of Small Business Leaders for Bush-Cheney 04. In addition to some contributions to the congressional candidates, she gave $25,000 to the Republican National Committee. And here's where it gets really interesting. The wife of Judge Saad, the filibustered nominee, one of Bush's filibustered nominees, gave $10,000 to Swift Boat Veterans for Truth to help them spread lies about John Kerry's military service in Vietnam. Plutonium in the Daily Kos says, on August 31st of 2004, Rush Limbaugh said, if you really dig deep, you might find some Clinton Political Action Committee money laundered three or four different ways, found its way to the Swift vets, but that's just me, he says. Plutonium Note says, usual, it was just Limbaugh. In reality, you don't even have to dig that deep to find money getting from the Swift Boat Vets straight to the Bloomfield Hills, Michigan home of a filibustered Bush judicial nominee. Conspiracy or coincidence? I'll let you figure out. Here, Henry Sod, his wife, giving money to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. This incredibly toxic group of liars. They trot somebody out who happened to be in Vietnam at the same time Kerry was, but like in the other side of the country. Well, he can say, yes, I served at the same time Kerry. And this guy comes out and says, yes, I served with John Kerry, and I can tell you he's a bum. And he never even met him. We're not going to refight that battle. But in any case, here you wonder about Judge Henry Sod. Now you know, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. Meanwhile, George W. Bush heading off to Europe, or heading off to Holland on Saturday, where he won't be arrested. I'll tell you about that after the break.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I love my country so much, man. Like an exasperating friend. Dum, 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 dum.
And welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, the High Court of The Hague has ruled that the government of Holland cannot arrest George W. Bush as a war criminal when he arrives there on Saturday. I'm sure he's heaving a sigh of relief. Activists had demanded that Bush be arrested or a court order issued to block his entry to the Netherlands due to numerous flagrant breaches of the Geneva Convention. They wanted him arrested as a war criminal, responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of civilians. But the High Court said that while the charge may have some merit, that they didn't think that it was the place of the court system of Holland to get involved in international relations. The exact language for the ruling, the granting the request would have had, quote, far-reaching consequences for relations between the Netherlands and the U.S., end quote. Yes, indeed, it would have, and perhaps not so negative, but who knows? Can you imagine if we all had to get together and raise bail for Junior, for Bush Junior? Two former top aides, speaking of raising bail, two former top aides of House Majority Leader Tom DeLay's brokered a political deal in Saipan, a little island in the Pacific noted for its sex tourism business and its cheap labor for making textiles, clothing. Brokered a deal 5 years ago that helped land island government contracts worth $1.6 million for a Washington lobbyist, now the target of a federal corruption probe. U.S. promises of, or using promises of U.S. tax dollars as bartering chips, Edwin A. Buckham and Michael Scanlon traveled to these remote Pacific islands in late 1999 to convince two local legislators to switch their votes for Speaker of the Territory's 18-member House of Representatives. They succeeded. Now, why would they want a new Speaker of the House for the Mariana Islands? Well, you've heard of Jack Abramoff, haven't you? The guy who is accused of paying for Tom DeLay's overseas trips? Turns out that these guys cut a deal with Jack Abramoff that gave him millions. Millions! Abramoff took the Fifth Amendment at federal hearings into this. Yes, indeed. And what was the million? How did he make the millions? By fighting the minimum wage in the Mariana Islands in Saipan. They don't even have a $5.15 minimum wage. They wanted to have $5.15. Tom DeLay went over, personally intervened on behalf of Jack Abramoff's company so that there wouldn't even be a $5.15 minimum wage in this American territory. You get it? See you next week. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.